Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Quiva, and my friend MJ.
What up?
So, in the last chapter, the Emperor Tang Taizong died, and this episode is going to take place largely in the afterlife, and will include the torture of the souls of the dead, and you know, we're also going to talk about murder and suicide.
Yay!
Yeah, it's...
I kind of feel like that murder and suicide should just be a general expectation of this podcast from here on out.
Oh, murder, definitely. I think suicide is going to be less frequent.
That is good news.
I hope that's right and I'm not just kind of forgetting the bad parts.
Are you lying to our listeners, Quiva?
Not intentionally.
Are you lying to make them feel better?
Not intentionally.
White lies can cause more pain, you know.
So, Taizong's experience of death is kind of interesting, actually. His soul drifts out of his body, and everything starts to become very dreamlike. And he finds himself surrounded by guardsmen on horseback and apparently on a hunting party. And he goes along with this. They travel for a long time until suddenly the rest of the party and the horses suddenly disappear and he's left wandering alone.
God damn it. Don't you hate when the ghost hunting party just abandons you in the middle of nowhere and Google Maps isn't working?
It sucks.
It's awful. They should feel bad.
But suddenly a voice hails him and it's Cui Jue, which is the judge that Wei Zheng gave Taizong a letter for.
Cool.
And despite Wei Zheng saying previously that they still talk to him in their dreams, the letter actually says that it's been years since he's heard from him, Kui. And he says that over the last few years, he's only been able to make small sacrifices of fruit and vegetables. And he hopes Kui got them, but he's not sure about it. But he would be grateful if Kui could send Taizong back to life.
I'm so sorry, dude. Yeah, I meant to pay my dues. I really did. I think I did. I mean, it's been really, really tough time for me
financially. I definitely sent it.
Yeah, I know the check was in the post. I still remember that. But you know, the post these days, it's just like, yeah. But anyway, we're buds, right? Just like, make me not dead.
Yeah, yeah. Taizong doesn't read the letter, so he doesn't know what's written on it. But it's fine, it's fine. Kui already knew the situation with the dragon and why Taizong's here. And he says he owes a gratitude of debt to Wei because Wei looked after his children after he died. So he'll make sure to sort Taizong out.
Sweet.
So Kui leads Taizong to the City of the Dead where they pass Taizong's father, Li Wan, and his elder and younger brothers, Jian Cheng and Juan Ji, and his two brothers ward towards him shouting, "Here comes Shimin! Here comes Shimin!" Which was Taizong's name before he became emperor. When you become emperor, you like take up a new name.
It's really sweet, actually.
Yeah, and then they grab him and try to beat him to, I guess, double death while swearing vengeance.
Oh, not so sweet.
Which is reasonable, he killed them.
Oh, well, we've all got family shit, don't we?
This is how he became emperor. This is not from the book. This is actual something that happened. In 626, he baited Jian Cheng, the crown prince, and Jian Ji, the younger brother, to court by telling their father that the two of them had been having affairs with the royal consorts, and then ambushing them with a small force at the palace gate and killing both of them.
Yeah, no wonder he wants to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, and then the emperor, their dad, abdicated 60 days later. So.
Yeah, I'd need some time out after that, too.
His dad did live for 9 years after that. He kind of just had a peaceful retirement and didn't try to fuck with his son.
On one level, I think like you should probably have stepped in there as a parent. On the other level, that kid's a psychopath, run.
Yeah, so this is the guy, this is the, you know, the wise and virtuous leader that we've been following for the last chapter, and we'll continue to follow.
I'm so glad that I mean, this is a whole new perspective on why it was so important to get permission for that pilgrimage.
And like this is it's not like the novel doesn't mention these events directly, but like his brother's trying to beat him is in there, and they uses their real names, so I assume that the author probably assumed that anyone who's reading this would know that history,
Yeah, I suppose.
which is interesting in just so far as I suppose it wasn't whitewashed.
Yeah, I suppose, because he seems to be largely on the side of the, oh, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not
Establishment.
empirical, the yeah, the oh, what's the word for to do with emperors and things?
Imperial.
Imperial, thank you. Thank you. See, you do words good sometimes. For the listeners, Cueva mispronounced Grandiose as Grandiose earlier. Anyway,
It's my favorite Pokemon,
this is so gonna be edited out, isn't
Oh, I'll see what mood I'm in when I go to edit this.
it? yeah, he does seem to be on the side of the imperial establishment in most cases, but it's interesting that he's not glossing over it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, it is what it is. This is the best way for it to possibly be if you don't want to have like a loose cannon like monkey running the show.
Yeah.
So, let's accept all the fratricide and such like, and just like just keep our heads down and do the work.
Yeah. So Kui calls a blue hook tusk demon to drive them off, drive Taizong's brothers off him.
Okay.
After that, they travel for a bit more until they finally arrive at the Palace of the Ten Kings of the Underworld. We went through their names already in like chapter 3, so I don't think I'll list them all out again.
Yeah, unless you really do want to make a note of it in case you need to speak to the manager after death.
This is fine. The managers are going to be all too happy to help an upper class emperor out.
Of course.
So, in fact, when Taizong arrives, the Ten Kings bow to him and insist he lead their procession to the sorry, and insist he leads their procession to the Chamber of Darkness, where they're going to hold the court.
Ew.
Yeah, and Taizong feigns modesty and refuses to take the lead, but they argue for this for a bit, and the kings actually insist that he outranks them, because he's an emperor of the world of light and they only rule the world of darkness.
This is the worst Mrs. Doyle ever. I
Go
don't
on.
like this.
Yeah, no, it's.
I don't like this at all.
The court session turns out to be a bit of a formality. Taizong insists he's not at fault. He had no way of knowing that Wei Zheng could have killed that dragon in his dreams, and the dragon was guilty anyway, so fuck it. And the kings agree and say they basically just had to go through the motions after the Dragon King lodged his complaint, but actually they already sent on his soul to be reincarnated already. He's not even here.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not even attempting to have a trial. So they apologize to Taizong for the inconvenience of dragging him to the underworld, and they ask Kui to bring out the book with Taizong's death record to see when he's actually meant to die. So Kui finds the right entry, but he realizes that it said Taizong is meant to die on the 13th year of his reign, and Taizong has been emperor for 13 years.
Well,
So
sorry.
he grabs a brush and quickly draws some extra lines to change the 13 to a 33 before bringing the book back.
I don't like this at all.
Oh, but it was great when Monkey did
It wasn't great when Monkey did it. He
it.
went like full Sun Wukong.
So, okay,
And
sorry.
I've been
Sorry,
thinking about.
I was the one who was enthusiastic about Monkey doing it. Actually, never mind.
I've been thinking about why I'm uncomfortable with stories of immortality and why the fuck you need to get me out of this death shit makes me uneasy. And I think it's because, death is no matter which way you slice it, no matter what side of the political compass you are on, and no matter what your moral beliefs are, essentially the ultimate leveler. We're all gonna die. It's gonna happen to all of us. We're all going to die, and it doesn't matter if you are fucking Jeff Bezos or asking for change outside a train station. You're going to fucking die, and that's an inevitability, and that's it's something that makes it clear that we're all human, and nobody is too special to fucking die.
Yeah.
And I think this is why this is, I'm not gonna say, like, it's not upsetting me in a level where I'm just seriously going to, this isn't gonna ruin the rest of my day. I've just been thinking about my reaction to it, and why it's so, such, I have such distaste for it.
Yeah.
So this in particular is, it's like, yeah, you're too special to die. That's fine. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yep, it's not great. Don't really have anything to add. So Kui brings the doctored record out, and all the kings are happy that Taizong has 20 years left, and let him go. And on his way out, he asks if everyone in his palace is going to be okay. And they tell him, "Oh yeah, they're all going to be fine for the moment, except your younger sister. She's going to die soon."
Great.
Yep. So he thanks them for letting him know, and he asks if there's any sacrifices they'd like, maybe some melons, some nice melons. And their response is a pun. I don't think it's worth explaining, but it boils down to basically them asking for southern melons, which the footnote explains means pumpkins. So they just like some pumpkins.
Okay.
It's the underworld. They need to Halloween the place up a bit.
This is Halloween. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. Actually, I feel a lot more sympathetic towards Monkey now in his Sun Lucarin phase.
Yeah, because the rules aren't actually that ironclad at all. They're happy to bend them
No,
for.
he's not going, like, and this emperor apparently has not done much that we know of. He's not being hailed as this great and wonderful emperor who's improved the lives of people. We know that he's murdered all, like, half of his family, and just by virtue of the title, it's just kind of like, you get a pass, you get a pass.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of more on Sun Wukong's side now for saying, yeah, well, why aren't I special like that? Why? Because Monkey at least sort of looked after his clan a little bit.
Yeah, not very well, but
No, but he at least, tried to do good for people. Obviously his ego got in the way, and that fell by the wayside very early on, but
He found that nice mansion for them to live in.
yeah.
In fairness, he promoted four people who seemed to have cop on, and then just let them run the place.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, he was aware of his limitations in that sense. He was like, "You guys are smart. You go and yeah, you sort this shit out." Yeah. Overall, I like him better than the Emperor.
Yeah, so Taizong gets to head back to life, and Judge Kui and someone named Grand Marshal Chu go at Taizong to lead the way. He's worried the road looks unfamiliar, but Kui tells him that the way in and out of the afterlife are different paths, and they have to bring him to the Wheel of Transmigration. So they pass through the Mountain of Perpetual Shade to the 18-fold hell, where Kui explains in a poem all the hells and what you have to do to earn a time in each. So there's the Hell of the Rack, the Hell of Gloomy Guilt, the Hell of the Fiery Pit, The Hell of Hades, I do not know what that's a translation for, there's no footnote. The Hell of Tongue Pulling, The Hell of Skin Shredding, The Hell of Grinding, The Hell of Pounding, The Hell of Crushing, The Hell of Ice, The Hell of Mutilation, The Hell of Evisceration, The Hell of Boiling Oil, The Hell of Grim Darkness, The Hell of the Sword Mountain, The Hell of the Pool of Blood, The Hell of Aviki, and The Hell of Scales and Weights. Aviki is like the lowest level of Naraka in Buddhism. It's the worst place to be in all of existence, basically. And they have all of these hells, and it's, you know, just in case you thought Buddhism was all just nice, happy meditation and reincarnation as a butterfly.
The Hell of Aviki is a worse place to be than the Hell of Boiling Oil?
Yeah.
Oof. That is a lot of hell.
18 different hells.
The Hell of Gloomy Guilt does sort of sound like it's from a children's book, though. Like, could you see that, like, being in a Neil Gaiman novel, like one of the young adult ones?
That's one of the early ones. So it's one of, I think that's meant to be like one of the minor ones. So it's that one's described, the first three, the Rack, the Gloomy Guilt, and the Fiery Pit, are caused by 1,000 sins committed in the life before. So that's just kind of if you're generally a bit shitty throughout your life, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, 1,000 sins, and that's less than one sin a day over. It's not a lot of sinning.
No, it's not. It's not a huge amount of sinning, to be honest.
Like, over your entire life, like, say you live till you're about 80, like, how many sins even a month is that?
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't maths.
That's fine.
I'm sure someone else can maths for me if they so desire.
That's why we have calculators.
Yeah.
But I still can't be arsed to work it out. It's fine.
It's not a lot of sinning.
It's not, like, not a huge amount of sinning.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, and again, it depends on your definition of sin.
The big question is, wanking a sin? Like, because these aren't Catholics.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't a whole sort of different. Yeah, I'd want to know what the definition of sin is.
Yeah.
I know by the Catholic definition, I'm going to have, like, at least, on average, 12 sins a day. Not just wanking.
Sorry.
But, like, if you want to talk covetous thoughts, impure thoughts, thoughts of murder, you know, yeah, I'm gonna sin quite a bit in the course of an average day. Uncharitable thoughts, like, yeah, that's the thing as well. Is it sins of thought or sins of deed?
It really does not go into that much detail on Buddhist conception of morality here. I'm sorry.
Because if we're talking sins of deed, I'm still gonna, like, only we'll cut that down to maybe 2 sins a day. But even so, like, that still gives me, like, how many sins a year? Like 730 sins a year. And that's just 1 year. And, like, I'm a very heavy smoker. I probably don't have a hell of a lot left, but, like, assuming that I've got another 25 to 30 years, it's still, you know, I'm so in one of those hells. Probably boiling oil.
What does it say for boiling oil? Boiling oil, grim darkness, and sword mountain. For oppressing the righteous by violence and fraud.
Oh, okay. I'm probably not gonna.
Yeah,
get there.
That's for upper class sinners.
Okay, yeah, that's a white collar crime kind of thing.
Yeah, or cops.
No, cops. Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, they go past all the hells, and they make a nice little tour of it, and they come to 3 bridges. So there's a golden bridge, a silver bridge, and what Kui calls the no-option bridge.
The no-option bridge?
Yeah, so the no-option bridge is several miles long, and it's only a few feet wide. There's no handrails and a 100-foot drop below it. And if you fall in, there's no coming back from the river below.
It, it Sorry, the no option bridge in if this was a Catholic tale, would we call it the Hail Mary Pass? Hey, I do jokes.
It took me a moment to get that. The Silver Bridge is a much easier crossing, and Taizong sees a few travelers on it who seem to be persons of principle and rectitude, justice, and honesty.
So he doesn't belong.
Yeah, of course, he gets to take the Gold Bridge. And after he's escorted across the Gold Bridge, their way is blocked by a huge crowd of desperate souls begging Taizong to save them.
Collective action.
Now, get this, they're cut off from salvation because they have no money or belongings in the afterlife and no one makes sacrifices for them. They need cash.
Oh my God.
Even in the afterlife, they need cash.
Oh my God.
So, Taizong didn't bring any money with him, but Kui has a plan. There's a man named Jian Liang in Henan who is still alive, but he has in his life sacrificed huge amounts of money. So waiting for him in the underworld, he has 13 rooms full of gold and silver waiting for him.
Wow.
So Taizong can fill out a loan application with Kui as guarantor. And they could repay Liang in the world of the living when Taizong comes back to life.
Why doesn't capitalism end when you're dead?
Why don't loan applications end when you're dead?
Why don't banking systems end when you're dead? I'm so upset right now.
You just have to get a ghost mortgage to get on the ghost housing ladder.
I can't get a ghost mortgage. I've got terrible ghost credit.
Yeah, I mean it's hard when
Oh
you're being when fucking ghost landlords are just like charging you through the nose for ghost rent.
is so upsetting. That this is the only thing. Like, if you're a ghost and you're haunting a house, you assume that you're haunting that house rent-free. That is the assumption that you make if you're a ghost, that you're living rent-free. If not in someone's head, then definitely in someone's house. Like you assume it's a squatting thing. What if the ghosts are paying rent? This is no, I'm also really sorry if I'm just like getting very upset at somebody's culture. I don't. Capitalism should end when you're dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I don't think that should be a controversial statement.
So they borrow one room full of gold and silver, and distribute it among the ghosts to get them to fuck off so they can pass.
Well, that's something. Again, well, I mean, collective action did work in that
It
case,
did, it
so
did.
yeah, collective direct action, solidarity with our
Yeah.
homeless ghosts. Oh
Eventually they reach the junction of the sixfold path of transmigration. Taizong isn't sure what he's looking at, but Kui explains that this is where people come to be reincarnated. So those who perform good works will ascend to the way of immortals. Those who remain patriotic to the end will advance to the way of nobility. Those who practice filial piety will be born again into the way of blessing. Those who are just and honest will enter once more into the way of humans. Those who cherish virtue will proceed to the way of riches. And those who are vicious and violent will fall back into the way of demons. So it gets worse. So, if you're born rich, it's a sign you were a good person in a previous life.
Oh, this is very Calvinist.
And if
Don't
you're
like it.
and if you're and patriotism is a great virtue, so if you're patriotic, you'll be born as a nobleman.
I hate this.
It's really bad.
So bad. Yeah, no, I am very conscious that there again, there is probably so much nuance that we are missing here by virtue of ignorance of the belief system, ignorance of the cultural context, and possibly the translational language barrier.
True, and
I just, I'm.
I am kind of intentionally, as the way I'm doing this is rephrasing a lot into kind of more frivolous phrasing, because I like to not put things up on a pedestal.
True.
But I think there is
True.
a I think there's kind of another side to this, which is this kind of idea of property in the afterlife. I think kind of stems from people, making small sacrifices to their loved ones who died, to their ancestors, and this kind of
Yeah.
tradition of giving and remembering
I know that is really
those
important.
who
Yeah.
died. And I think that is a positive thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's it there's this kind of ugly side of it, as to where it's like, oh yeah, well, the rich people can sacrifice more, so therefore.
I mean, if it was a proportional value thing, like a 10% sort of a tithe more than,
Yeah, and
I don't know.
I don't know how it really works in practice. That is a thing I'm
Yeah.
quite ignorant of. So yeah, I don't want to be judging the values of these kind of these sacrificial offerings of these I don't know, ideas and rituals. But when it kind of intersects with capitalism, not quite, I suppose, like not really exactly what modern capitalism, because it's a Ming Dynasty novel, but this moneyed imperial powers, it doesn't it's kind of a corrupting influence on everything.
I would also like to point out that I am more angry at capitalism this week than I am usually angry at capitalism because this week in Ireland we watched as as nine people were illegally evicted from a property by both private hired security and the actual Gardaí or police force, and had the gaff basically wrecked. And fuck that. Join a renters union. Generally join a union, as the ghosts on the bridge have shown us. Collective action and pressure does work. So, yeah.
So I guess we can probably get back to the plot.
We can't, we yeah, I'm really sorry.
No, don't apologize. I'm doing this
I
too, and I
just
think
got
it's
really
good.
upset at ghost capitalism.
So Cui leads Tai Zong to the entrance of the Way of Nobility, and says he has to leave him with Grand Marshal Zhu. But Cui, when parting, tells Tai Zong to hold a grand mass for the souls that they promised to save, as well as, having given them money earlier, to hold a mass for them, to hold prayers for them in the world of the living.
Fucker better follow through.
Zhu leads him through the gate, where there is a saddled black-maned horse waiting for Taizong. Zhu helps Taizong mount it, and they ride to the bank of the Wei River, which I think is a real river. I'm not sure. It might be kind of a Styx equivalent here. That's speculation. I'm not entirely sure about that. I'm just, using the cultural touchstones that I have. Once again, I know very little about what I'm talking about, and I apologize for everything. Please, please.
Super interesting how rivers and crossing over are just such a feature of death in various cultures, though. I have nothing further to add to that. I just like it.
So, when they get to the river, Taizong reins in the horse, and he gets distracted watching a pair of golden carp frolicking in the waves. And Zhu gets annoyed at him and tells him to hurry up. He says that they're like running out of time, which is kind of concerning. But Taizong ignores him and refuses to go on. So Zhu just grabs his
Oh,
leg
yeah.
and pushes him off his horse into the river.
Oh, dear.
And Taizong suddenly wakes up in his coffin, screaming, "You've drowned me! You've drowned me!" This interrupts an argument Prime Minister Wei Zheng was having with some officials who were like trying to have a funeral. And Wei's like telling them not to bury the emperor yet.
Just hang on a bit. Just hang
Yeah.
on a little bit.
So one of the officials goes up to the coffin and shouts into it, "Your Majesty, if there's something bothering you, just tell us about it. You don't have to haunt your relatives." This is great. Like he literally thinks he's a ghost, and he's just like, "Just tell us what your problem is."
I mean, I feel like so many ghost human relations would be vastly improved by direct communication. Just say what you mean. Just say what you mean. Don't rattle the pans and, cause cold winds to sweep through the house and, just
Yeah.
say what you mean. Okay? We can work it out. We can work it out. You'll be surprised to find how open people are when you're honest about your feelings.
Wei Zhang tells him he's not a ghost, he's actually coming back to life, and he orders some people to grab some tools to open up the coffin, because they have actually sealed the fucking thing. So Taizong is still panicking, he thinks Yu was trying to drown him, and Wei Zhang orders some rice and some medicinal broth to be brought to help calm him down. And after eating, Taizong has a big long sleep to recover from dying.
You'd want to, I think.
Yeah. So the next day, Taizong explains his journey to his officials, and he starts making loads of proclamations in celebration of being not dead.
Also, I think you get a couple of those when you come back to life.
Yeah, he declares a general amnesty for prisoners, which is nice.
Yeah, that's good. Cool of him.
And then listed as like a separate thing, everyone convicted of a capital crime, they're not let off, but they're given leave to go home to their families for a year to sort out their affairs before they have to show back up again to get executed. There's about 400 people get this deal. I imagine many of them aren't going to come back. I don't think this is ever mentioned again, but I
Yeah.
imagine a lot of them are probably not going to come back.
Make sure to show up here next year so we can kill you, okay? You promise?
He also issues some edict for the welfare of orphans, and he marries off 3,000 court maidens and concubines from the Imperial Palace to military officers. How many fucking concubines do you need, man?
I mean, yeah, that just seems excessive. We get it, dude, you fuck.
So he also sends out a proclamation affirming Buddhism to be posted throughout the empire, as well as asking for a volunteer to take the pumpkins he promised to sacrifice to the gods of the underworld to bring them the pumpkins. That sentence got away from me.
Pumpkin pilgrimage.
Yeah, and he sends a room full of gold and silver from the treasury to repay Zhang Liang.
The pumpkin pilgrim could pick pumpkins. How many? Never mind.
Yes, and they get a pump they get a pumpkin pilgrim fairly quickly. So a man named Liu Quan arrives and offers to take the pumpkins to the underworld. So he which does mean dying, just so we're clear.
Oh.
Yeah, he wants to sacrifice himself because his wife, Li Qilian, committed suicide after he screamed at her for giving a gold hairpin to a begging monk. He claimed she was flaunting herself outside of their home.
I also feel like abusive relationships should end after death.
Yeah, that's not how this is gonna work.
No.
So he's taken to the lodge of the Golden Pavilion, and they put two pumpkins on his head. They tuck some money into his sleeves, and they give him poison. So when he dies, he brings the pumpkins to the 10 Kings of Darkness, and they thank him. And where he kind of tells the story, and when they hear about his wife, they ask for her soul to be brought out so they can reunite. This is
Oh
treated as a happy moment.
no. Ugh.
Yeah, King Yama decides to double check the debt records for the two of them, and they realize that they were both meant to live to old age. And he wants to send them back, But Li Kuilian's body is already rotted, so they can't send her soul back. So, do you remember the Emperor's sister is about to die?
Oh, great. Okay.
So they decide,
There's a body going.
she's not gonna need that anymore.
It's just very,
So they're just gonna put Li into actually the king's sister is also named Li, funnily enough. Or actually, sorry, that's their surname. They both have the surname Li, though it's not necessarily the same word because I don't know that the characters for the names aren't given, so they might be two characters. They might be two different characters with the same pronunciation. I don't know. In any case, they are going to put Li's soul into the Emperor's sister's body and send Louis back to his own soul. And with that plan, that we'll find out what happens with that next time, because that is actually the end of the chapter.
I feel like that's going to go swimmingly, and that there will be no problems there at all.
It'll be fine.
It's gonna be great.
It'll be fine. So there's two interesting things to note about Taizong's death record being changed.
Okay.
One is that in the novel his reign is increased from 13 years to 33 years, but his actual reign lasted 23 years.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if the numbers involved are significant in any way, but I think this might be to make the chronology of the novel work better. But it still doesn't really make sense if you try to include chapter 9, due to how that tries to make Xuanzang be born during Taizong's reign. In fact, it's going to make absolutely no sense when we get to the next chapter, but getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. Because if he's only reigned for 13 years.
Yeah, Taizong, and in the chapter 9, it actually gave Taizong or gave Xuanzang as being born in the 13th year.
Are we
So he should
doing
only
a
be.
time skip right now,
No,
or what? No?
whoever who like chapter 9 possibly like seems to have been probably inserted later, so whoever did that just like fucked it up.
Don't you, I mean, like, if you're gonna write fanfic, you don't need to pay attention to all of canon, but I
Yeah.
feel like there's some bits you should kind of take
Yeah,
into account.
cause so like minor spoiler, Xuanzang is going to show up again next chapter, and he's an adult. And it's explicitly like on the 13th year. Even though a different chapter says he was born in the 13th year, so it's just a fuck up.
Fair.
I think the timeline fits it with the 33-year reign. If you ignore chapter 9, though.
Okay.
The other thing is the record specifically said he will die in the 13th year of the Zhenguan period, which is the name for the period of Taizong's reign. Some emperors would declare a new calendar era regularly, but some, like Taizong, had one for their entire reign. But you always declared a new era when you started your reign as emperor, basically. So by increasing his reign, they're increasing the length of that calendar era, and it seems like they're using those eras to record when people are meant to die. So presumably there's no one whose death is recorded in the 14th to 33rd years of the Zhenguan era, considering those
Okay.
weren't meant to exist because they just fucked with the records.
Time is fake
So
anyway.
this is like something I'm just extrapolating. This is not like a thing that happens in the novel, but I feel like Kui just may have like extended everyone's life by 20 years.
I guess that's a lot fairer than the yeah. Yeah, I'm still upset about ghost capitalism, but that seems fairer.
Yeah, well, except for the Emperor's sister.
Oh yeah, she kind of gets real fucked over by this situation.
Yeah, she had the bad luck of like dying on the same day as Taizong, so her date didn't get moved up.
Oh, don't you hate it when your overachieving sibling just overshadows everything you do?
Yeah, even like just dying like at the same time as you, it's just so rude. Just dying just before you do, just to show you
Grow
up
up.
with his massive
Grow up.
imperial funeral.
Ugh.
Yeah, as of time of recording this, this won't go out for a week or two, I guess. But as of time of recording this, Netflix put on a second series of a show that they have called the New Legends of Monkey, which
Oh,
is
yes.
it's a Australian and New Zealand produced show, extremely loosely based on Journey to the West. It's kind of more inspired by the BBC 70s dub that they called Monkey.
With the weirdest intro.
Yeah, you should, everyone, I encourage you at the very least to look up the intro to Monkey from 1978. It's probably easy to find if you search for Monkey Magic, because that's the song.
It's a trip. It's a trip.
But yeah, that show is fun as well. It is in absolutely no way authentic to this novel, but it's fun. It's fairly silly. I feel like the second series is a lot sillier than the first one, as well though. But it has a bit of like a Xena Hercules feel to it, I think.
Okay, interesting.
So, have fun with that. And listen to this podcast. Send us money. I don't have a Patreon set up or anything, but just find a way to give me money anyway.
We'll need it for the afterlife.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, that's the episode. I think we're both sick of repeating Twitter links over and over again. I'll put them in the notes on the show.
Find them below. Oh, I don't know if this will be out in time, but if you are in Dublin, I and a bunch of people who are involved in the comedy collective Hysteria will be in a show called Token Cis in the Dublin Fringe on the 5th and the 6th of September. It's an almost all trans comedy lineup.
If you live in Dublin, go see MJ in person.
Woo! Like, comment, subscribe. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, actually. That's real helpful.
So, yeah. We don't know how to end podcasts. We can't stop talking.
Okay.